God was leading him, father stayed in that particular place. And that's where Abraham grew up with his family, and presumably where he met Sarah, because that's where we find him at this point, married to Sarai. And then God says to him, when his father's died, God says to him, now I want, he didn't actually say this, but it's implicit in what was said, I want you to continue what I originally called your father to do. I want you to move on to Canaan. Now Eunice and I know something about, over the years, packing up and leaving home, packing up and moving on. How many times is it? 9 or 10, I think. Most of you probably know what it's like to pack up house and move on to a new one. Well, Abraham, of course, and Sarai had not only themselves and their family and their servants, but their cattle and their goats and their sheep and all the other things that had to be done to gather up and the family move, to move on again. And no sooner have they got to Canaan and they settle themselves in Bethel that the famine comes and they have to move again. You ever experienced that? You just get settled in one place and it's time to move on again. And they move again from Canaan to Egypt and then back to Bethel, and there are family issues because Abraham's nephew Lot is living with them, and they come into dispute with some of Lot's people and Abraham. And there's a whole story there of family disputes and family disagreements. And through all of this, Sarai is somewhere in the background of the story. I'm sure she was under a lot of pressure and under a lot of stress at that particular time. And actually, as you see, I put up there, her name, I discovered, Sarai, means quarrelsome. Imagine when your little child is born. What are we going to call this child? I know, we'll call her Quarrelsome. Strange name. And I looked that up, and because I never knew what the word the name Sarai meant. I knew what Sarah meant, and we'll come to that later on. But I thought, what does Sarai mean? Well, apparently it means quarrelsome. So would you marry somebody, Stephen, called Quarrelsome? I wonder what Wendy means. I think it means, we went through this before, didn't we? It means beautiful woman or something like that, I think. Something like that. I can't remember exactly. Anyway, by chapter 15, after the family issues have occurred, Abraham hears from God. And God says, Abraham, you're going to be the father of a great nation. You're going to have children. You're going to have a son. Now, of course, at this time, Sarai has no children. And the pressure, I think, in the story is on Sarai, because if the message comes from God, you're going to have a massive family, Abraham, and he's married to Sarai. Sarai must, when Abraham says, oh, by the way, I wonder if a husband, and a Christian husband, you've ever said to your wife, oh, by the way, God has told me, I wonder if I remember saying to Eunice many years ago, God is leading me to go and study at Bible college. I'm going to give up my job, I'm going to move away, and you're going to come with me, and we'll take the children. We had two, I think, at the time. We're going to move on. And this is what Abraham would have been saying to Sarai. It's time to move on. God has made a promise. We're going to have a son. But temporarily, they had to go down to Egypt to escape the famine. And then they moved back to Bethel. This is all going on, but nothing's happening. The pressure must have been on Sarai. She's feeling, what's going to happen? I need to have a child. If I don't have a son, these promises from God will never come to pass. And later on, we shall look at them in more detail. She decides, I know what I'll do. One of the things that we do in our tradition, she said to herself, is I will give to my husband my maidservant, Hagar. See if she's more fertile than I am. Perhaps she will give him a son. And she says to her husband, go and sleep with my maidservant. See if she can give you a son where I can't. And if you know the story, you know that that happens, and Ishmael is born. And out of that, we shall see later on, comes a lot of bitterness, a lot of anger, a lot of difficulties and a lot of problems, which actually have affected world history ever since. But we won't go into that today. But they have made a massive change. By chapter 17, God has repeated his promise of a son to Abraham. God keeps repeating his promises. God keeps saying, Abraham, this is going to happen. And in fact, in order to reinforce it, God says, you're going to have different names. Abraham will be called Abraham, which instead of meaning exalted father, means father of many. So you're going to have a new name just to guarantee that I am going to bring about the promise that I'm making. Your wife, Sarah, who's been known as Sarai, meaning quarrelsome, will become Sarah Princess. That's beautiful, isn't it? She's going to become a princess. That's going to be the meaning of her name. We'll think about that a bit later on. By chapter 18, God reinforces his promise again. And what did Sarah do when we read the reading? She laughed with incredulity. How can that be? How can it be possible? So that's the story that we see this lady in, because shortly after that, of course, well, a year after that, because that was the promise, Isaac is born. And we move on to the first section, which we've already moved on to. Moving on, I'm back a bit, moving on, back one, that's it. Facing change and challenge. Sorry, I went through the whole story and you jumped ahead, didn't you? So now you've seen what's going on. Facing change and challenge. I wonder if the name Quarrelsome or Sarai did reflect her character. We don't learn enough about her to really know, do we? I think that Sarai, or Sarah as she's learned later on, is certainly a strong-minded woman. We'll see later on that she is a woman capable of bitterness, but she's a woman who discovers in her life the promises of God. Does that ring a bell with anybody? That kind of character? I'm not saying you're like that necessarily, but you know, the challenge is here, isn't it? She's capable of strength. She's capable of telling her husband exactly what she thinks at times, I believe. But also, she's capable of very bitter and angry responses. All of these things are embedded into Sarai. So back to the story. Abraham and Sarai find themselves in Haran. God calls Abraham to move on and says, remember what I ordered your father to do? I'm calling you as well. So Abraham packs up, makes the move along with his wife and family. And in all of this, there's no mention of Sarai at all. I assume from the story that she's just at the moment going along with everything that Abraham is saying. Now, I wonder when you moved on in different ways, was that a joint decision in your family? There's a point to discuss. You imagine Abraham and Sarai now. Abraham saying, God has called me. We're going. And it seems as though, because I don't know from the story, Sarai must have said, okay, Abraham, I believe what God is saying, let's go. Have you ever been in that circumstance? I'm sure we have. I remember Eunice saying to me a long, long time ago, when the time came when we wanted to move to Bible college and change the job, and she said, well, this is what I married you for, the better for worse to listen to God, and I'm here to go with you. And there was no argument, I can remember at the time, few challenges, few difficulties to face and get through it all, but we got it through, didn't we? And here we are today. I don't know what was going on in Abraham and Sarai's relationship, but at the moment we don't hear much about her at all. But I wonder if you can begin to think for a minute of the pressure that's on her as a wife. When Abraham comes to her and says, right, God has said we've got to pack up and move on. And Sarai says, not again, Abraham. I just got to know the lady around the corner, and I know where the supermarket is and the shop and the stalls and everything. Everything's just falling into place. And you say, we've got to go again and move on. But she packs up and off she goes. I hope and I believe that at this point she's still a woman who trusts God and follows the same God as her husband, and they go together. But moving's a big change. And as I read this story, I thought, you know, as in a relationship as husband and wife, when you're together, how much do you discuss these things? I don't know how much Abraham and Sarai discussed it, because I don't read the story, that she's not mentioned. At the moment, she seems to simply say, I'm going to support you, I'm going to support my family, and I'm going to move on. But imagine the challenge for her. It may have been harder for her than it was for Abraham, because she had to think about packing up her servants and everybody else and the family and everybody else that she had to come along with her. Not family in the sense of her own children, because as we've said, she didn't have any at this point. But she would have had servants, she would have had animals to look after, so many things that they did together. But say, Sarai at the moment appears to go along with Abraham's ideas. There's no challenge from her, no quiet from her. I don't know if that's a lesson for wives or not. That's up to you to discuss in small groups. I leave that question hanging open for you, whether it's right to support. But I do believe in a relationship, husband and wife, it's right to support one another in whatever God is doing. Now, I certainly meet some families where it's the wife that's called into ministry. It's the wife that says, God has called me, and the husband says, I'll come with you and I'll honour that. I'll honour that calling. It's right, isn't it, though, to honour and listen to what God is saying to our spouses and what God is doing? It seems to me, and please correct me later on in groups if you think I'm wrong, that Sarai listened to God too and said to Abraham, at the moment I go along with this, we have no problem, we'll go together. And we do read, actually, that physically she was a beautiful woman, because there was another occasion when, we'll come to that in a minute, when she was asked by Abraham to lie and say that she was his sister when they moved into Egypt. You know that part of the story? I mean, technically, I think she actually was a sister of some sort, of some kind. But 1 Peter 3 verse 6 said, the holy women of the past made themselves beautiful by their attitude. That's an interesting challenge, isn't it? So Sarai was a very submissive wife, so it appears to me in the story at the moment. But she supported what God was doing in their lives, and they worked together and they supported one another together. And really, I think the lesson for me here is that husbands and wives need to support each other in following God, recognizing the gifting and calling that each has. At the moment, Sarai is, according to the passages that we're reading, just quiet. We don't hear anything about her much at all, except she accepts this challenge. And I don't want to put her down, because I think the challenge that she faces was massive. To make these huge changes, to move to strange countries, to be moved around by her husband, I think she's a powerful woman. I think she's a strong woman. And sometimes to face change with God's help, we need to be strong. We need to have a strong faith in God when we accept change. And God moves us on. And God does sometimes move us on, doesn't he? Physically, mentally, spiritually, God is moving us on all the time. And Sarai appears to have faced these challenges with faith and with strength, because we hear no problems from her. But let's move on. Because now promises are received and we face something different in Sarai's life at the beginning. They're back in Bethel. And once again, God comes and speaks to Abraham, and Abraham receives the promise from God, a promise in which, as I said before, Sarai is 100% involved, because the promise to Abraham is, you will have a son. And as Sarai hears this, she must be saying, this, the pressure's on me. I'm to have a child because I am my husband's wife. If he's going to be a father, then the obvious thing is that I'm the one to be pregnant. I'm the one to have a child. And I wonder if she felt pressure. How do you think she felt? Do you think she felt a pressure on her? That God's will is going to be achieved through me and I can't do anything about it? There's nothing I can do to make myself, well, there are things you can do to make yourself pregnant, obviously, sleep with your husband. But nothing seems to be happening. It doesn't seem to be working. Maybe they prayed about it together. Maybe they cried to God. I don't know. But she comes up with an idea. Because doubt is beginning to creep in, isn't it? She's beginning to wonder, how can this happen? Maybe I need to give God a little bit of a helping hand, because I can't do anything about this. So she comes to Abraham. She says, Abraham, look, why don't you take Hagar? Why don't you take my maidservant? It's quite a common thing in our culture. It's quite a common thing with other families to do this. Take Hagar as a wife. You know, have a child with her. Sure enough, that happens. Abraham listens to his wife, perhaps not terribly wisely, but there we are. That's something you can discuss in small groups, how wise that was for Abraham to listen to Sarai. But he did. Because maybe, say, Abraham was beginning to doubt as well. Maybe he was beginning to wonder, how can God do this? You know, Sarai is not becoming pregnant. Maybe he says, well, maybe that's the way God's going to work. Maybe my wife has got a point. Maybe this is how it's going to happen. And he goes ahead with what probably, I think, we'll discuss that in groups perhaps in the week, was probably a mistake. Rather than waiting on God to see God's promises achieved and revealed, they take another route. And of course, if you know the story, you know that Hagar indeed does conceive a child. And it says in the Bible, in chapter 16 of Genesis, that as a result, she despised her mistress. Can you imagine? Now try and imagine this situation. There's Abraham, and there's his wife, and there's basically her maidservant, who is now the mother of his son. And they're all living together in the same household. You fancy living in a household like that? There was a bit of tension. In fact, there was more than a bit of tension. There were downright arguments, and there were downright bitternesses. And of course, poor old Abraham stuck right in the middle, because he's got Hagar saying on the one hand, oh, I'm the superior one now. I'm the one who can have the child. I'm the mother of your son. And on the other hand, his wife is saying, why did we allow this? That wretched woman is all proud now. She's forgotten that she's just a maid servant. She hates me and she despises me. You've got to get rid of her. And the whole family situation just becomes a mess. And Hagar leaves the family home with Ishmael, her son. And if you read the story of Hagar and Ishmael, do you know, this shows to me the wonderful love of God. Because I still don't think that this was really God's way. God was going to bring his promises about. He didn't need a helping hand from Abraham and Sarai. He didn't need that helping hand, but they'd done this. And how does God feel about Hagar and Ishmael? He appears to Hagar and Ishmael and he says, look, I'm going to bless your son. Your son will be a father. He'll be a wild man. There'll be problems in his life, but he will have a great nation. too. I will work my promises out through him as well. Hagar, I want you to, now here's the challenge. Hagar, I want you to go back to the family home. I want you to go back and stay with Abraham and Sarah. Live peacefully, live quietly, live your life, bring up your son, live your life with the family, and try and heal the bitterness. God was in the middle of all this, in spite of everything. So, I wonder, Sarai, where are you in all this? Have you begun to doubt God? You've turned into a bitter lady. That's very sad, isn't it? She seems to have allowed bitterness to take a hold in her life. She lives with the consequences of her choices. You see, the wonderful thing is, when we make mistakes on the pathway with God, God's often able to change the circumstances and bring about good through them. But we still have to learn to deal with the consequences. And Sarai had to try and live somehow with Hagar in the house, with Ishmael in the house, somehow try and live together and bring things together. And sadly, at times, she didn't do a very good job of doing that. But by chapter 18, as we've said, God repeats his promise. Can we move on to the next one? And expectations are realized. Doubt becomes faith. Can you imagine the story in chapter 18 that David read to us when these visitors arrive at the tent and they bring this message? In a year's time, Sarah will have a son. And this old lady of some 98, 99 years is in the tent and she hears this because she's sort of snooping and listening to see what's going on at the keyhole or whatever they had in the tent. She hears this promise and she says, well, that's amazing. That's just out of the story. That's just not going to happen. I'm too old. And she actually laughs because it is funny. You can imagine it, you know, almost on the front page of the paper, can't you? 99-year-old lady has child. And you'd be showing each other, you say, how can that happen? That's crazy. But the angels or the Lord, probably the Lord Jesus Christ, actually in incarnate form, because he calls him the Lord, doesn't it, many times when he speaks. But when these men heard her, they said, she's laughing. And Sarai comes out then and she lies. I mean, this is getting a bit problem, Sarai. She says, I didn't laugh at all. Of course I didn't laugh. But of course she did, because utterly incredulously, she thought, this can't happen. But here's a striking thing, that the message comes from these guys who've come from God. The message comes effectively from God, and the message is anything too hard for the Lord? Can you remember someone else in the New Testament that something very similar to that was said? Something very similar to that was said to a lady in the New Testament in a similar circumstance. Mary, absolutely. I knew it was in your head. I could see your eyes moving. And he said, with God, nothing is impossible. And here's the story. God says, I'm still in control of all this. Sarai and Abraham, you've gone down one route, or Sarah and Abraham, that they've now become. You've gone down one route, but I am going to fulfill my promises in the way that I said I would. God will act. And amazingly, Isaac is born. God's purposes are achieved. And do you know what they called him? They called him Isaac. Did you know what the name meant? It's up there. Son of laughter. He laughs. Yes. There's two different kinds of laughter going on here, isn't there? The first time Sarah laughed, I think it was a laugh of incredulity and unbelief. How can that be? That is just too silly for words. That's not possible. And it's so impossible that it's funny. Now, of course, as she holds her son in her arms, it's absolutely hilarious. Because God has acted. God has moved. She's roaring with laughter. And it's a laughter of joy, the laughter of happiness, the laughter of seeing God's actions revealed. I wonder if she thinks to herself, I don't know what she thought to herself, but if I'd have been Sarah, I might have been thinking to myself now, if only I'd just waited on God and trusted, we wouldn't have all that hassle with Ishmael and Hagar. And sadly, unfortunately, the sad part of the story is, of course, that the bitterness doesn't completely go away, and Hagar actually and Ishmael actually do get sent away from the situation, and Hagar has to go out into the desert and bring up Ishmael on her own in the desert. A very sad situation that actually, although God could and would have healed Sarah's bitterness, Sarah doesn't allow that. That's a sad part of the story for me, isn't it? Because bitterness hurts. You know, when we harbor bitterness in our hearts towards another, it always causes a challenge and it always causes a problem. And it hurts us as much as, if not more, than it hurts them. So Sarah, I would say to you, you know, it's too late now, I suppose, but I would want to say to Sarah, please don't hold on to the bitterness. In a way, because partly it was her own fault, wasn't it? For doubting God. I wouldn't want to blame her, because God isn't into the blame business in this story, but he's simply saying, look, Sarah, if you'd hung on, I was going to act, but whose time does God act in? His, not mine. And it wasn't because, as I've heard preached in the past, that Abraham and Sarah's faith grew over 25 years until they finally had enough faith to have a son. No, in fact, they lost their faith at times. But God said, I'm going to honor you, and I'm going to honor you in such a way that people will say, wow, this is impossible. It could only be done because God's done it. That's what was happening. And if only, Sarah, you could have seen that a little bit sooner, that God does things in impossible ways to show that it is him indeed, not you. And I bet people did laugh when they met Sarah in the marketplace or in various places, carrying her son at 99 years old, maybe wheeling along in a wheelchair. And there was her son. They must have said, what? You're a mother at 99 years old? This is fantastic. This is amazing. And she said, yes, it's God's doing. What a testimony. What a testimony that God had done an impossible thing. So what kind of woman was Sarai when she was still Sarai? Was she at that time a quiet woman of faith and obedience, supporting her husband's calling? So it would seem to me she listens. But after a little while, doubt, the pressure of responsibility, even bitterness begins to set into her life and harm is caused. But God does achieve his purposes. She becomes a mother. And what are the lessons for us, the final lessons? Well, there is something about supporting the calling of our spouse, and it might, I think, in this day and age, be either way around, listening to what God is saying and being prepared to support one another in it, as she appears to support Abraham at the beginning. Also calling us to hold on to the promises of God. If God has made a promise, hang on to it. God's timing is not always our timing. I used to say years ago, God has no sense of timing. In actual fact, it's quite the opposite, because God's timing and my timing are not the same, are they? Often when we see God, he will act. We want it to be yesterday, if not sooner, don't you? You know the man who prayed, God, give me patience and give it to me now? That's the old story, isn't it? You know, we sometimes have to wait. Sarah, you could have waited, but she didn't. She thought she could do something better and find another way. And that is still causing problems in the world, even today. The problem never really entirely went away for Sarah. And the bitterness was still there, and Hagar eventually ended up leaving the family. So the challenge was still there to a certain extent. But she becomes a mother. She sees God's blessing. And perhaps another lesson in here is to believe for the impossible. God does impossible things. Now, there might just be a piece of music to come into at the end, which we would try to sing, but you know, will it work? Simon's holding his hand up. That either means wait a bit.